Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining today's conference call. I'm Elizabeth Kerr with Business Forward, and I'll be moderating our conversation today. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. About a year ago, we here at Business Forward invested some resources in learning more about our national network, and we were really pleased to find out that more than half, and in fact 57% of our network is women. And with that in mind, we started thinking about projects that would use this group to inform policy and also how to best serve the business leaders that we work with every day. And so now, as the nation has really turned its eyes toward the real and problematic harassment women face in the workplace, and employers across the country are trying to understand the factors that might make it harder for women and men to advance professionally, we really wanted to dig into some of those questions. And so to answer those questions, we partnered with bipartisan pollsters Margie O'Meara and Christine Matthews to talk to women directly. Margie is a partner at GBA Strategies, as well as the creator and co-host of the top-rated podcast, The Pollsters, and Christine Matthews is president of Bellwether Research. Together, they have nearly a half century of expertise in polling and qualitative research. This is an interactive phone briefing, so after a presentation from Margie and Christine, we'll open it up to both your questions and suggestions. For those of you who are new to Business Forward, we organize local roundtables, Washington fly-ins, conference calls, webinars, and media trainings for more than 100,000 business leaders across America. And at these briefings, entrepreneurs, investors, senior executives at mid-sized companies all get the chance to brief policymakers on issues that are affecting their businesses and how Washington can work better with businesses to accelerate the economy. To date, more than 600 mayors, governors, members of Congress, senior administration officials, and issue experts have participated in our programming and helped lead calls like the one Margie and Christine are helping us with today. And this is all thanks to the support of more than 60 of America's largest and most respected companies. Before we get started with our call, I need to cover a few housekeeping items. First, as part of the email confirmation you received when you registered for this event, it says Open Visual Interface. Click on that link to view a slideshow presentation that will go along with the call today. These slides are also available on Business Forward's website at businessfwd.org if you are having trouble accessing them through the webinar platform. Again, the slides that you can follow along for the presentation are either on the website at businessfwd.org, or you can find them as part of this visual interface where right in the email confirmation where it says Open Visual Interface. Also, this call is on the record. That means that we will release a recording after the call today. There may also be reporters on the line. This is an interactive phone briefing, like I mentioned earlier, and there will be time for you to ask questions and share your advice after Margie and Christine go through their presentation. And so to do that, you can either press 1 at any time on your telephone keypad, including during their presentation, or you can email us your question at info@businessfwd.org, and I'll read that question aloud for you. So again, press 1 on your telephone keypad or email us at info@businessfwd.org, and I can ask your question. With that, we're going to get started. Please welcome Margie and Christine.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be joined by Christine. This is, you know, a topic that Christine and I have, we've partnered on a lot of other bipartisan projects over the years. And, you know, in my free time, I like to talk about the challenges and goals and priorities that women face in the workplace and beyond. So to have an opportunity like this with Business Forward was really great. So I'm going to go through some slides, which I can't see in Chris because they're coming up on my page, but we're right now, I'm assuming, on the title homepage. And Christine is going to feel free to jump in as needed. And then we'll take questions at the end. And this survey really focused very much in a lot of breadth as well as depth in reaching women from a variety of backgrounds and exploring a variety of different topics. So we're going to just touch on some of the key highlights and the key findings that we found. So just to go over what we did, this is now page 2. So next slide, please. We did the survey right in the middle of November. We talked to 1,500 women overall. It was done online. We included over samples of African American women, Latina women, and women executives and women who are in leadership. So we're able to look at all those audiences independently as well as women overall nationally. So I just want to pause and note a few things. When we say women executives here, this is self-identified executives and women in leadership. So we recognize that women come into executive and leadership roles from a variety of different paths and journeys. So that doesn't necessarily mean college. It doesn't necessarily mean high income. It doesn't necessarily mean full time. If women have a leadership and executive role in their organization, then we want to talk to them, and or at least have that take them at their word that that is the role that they have, I should say. So this is a broad view reaching women in leadership roles around the country. This wasn't to just drill down on the Sheryl Sandbergs of the world, but to really explore women who are facing a lot of these challenges in their day-to-day life. Next slide, please. So just some key findings before we dig a little bit deeper. Women across demographic groups face systemic, personal, and professional challenges in their lives. These challenges are magnified in communities of color and vary by party. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of these differences. Sexual harassment is not necessarily a top-tier obstacle, but it's still pervasive, and it is a top-tier policy priority. This is a real nuance, and given the time that we're in, I think it's important for us, for anyone who wants to talk about these issues, to have some precision with that women's issues are just not simply sexual harassment. That Me Too and Time's Up and the issues that movement and that conversation brings up can be and should be very broad and inclusive in terms of the kinds of voices that are included, the kinds of experiences that and challenges that we're looking for remedy, and the kinds of policy priorities that people want to see. There's also substantial bipartisan agreement on top policies. So there may be some differences in party in terms of how women view the different challenges they face, but in terms of what sorts of priorities would really help women, there's a lot more agreement than disagreement. Next slide, please. This is an overall table setting kind of question here, asking women, how do you feel about how challenging it's been in your life to achieve the professional goals you've had for yourself? And women say it's been challenging. I think one of the key takeaways from our work here is that work and job fulfillment and professional goals are really important to women from a variety of different walks of life. This is, you know, not a niche issue. This is something that women really face and feel some concern and worry about across the board. So 60% roughly say it's been challenging. And that's true across our key demographics, whether we're talking about executives, Latina women, or African American women. You have 11% who say, I have not had professional goals, and about a quarter who say, it hasn't been challenging. So for sure, this is a concern that transcends a lot of different audiences and groups. Next slide, please. So we put this in here. There are a couple places where we've sold in some other public data that I think is helpful, just given the amount of interest there is in the suite of issues right now. There's a lot of work out there being done, and this was done by PRRI, and they do a lot of work on some cultural issues and religious issues, and they partnered with MTV, and they're talking to people 15 to 24. So this is young people, and we put this in here just because it's worth seeing where the next generation thinks we're headed. I think that's an important layer to our conversation here. It's troubling. It's worrying. And so they ask the question a little bit differently than some of the questions we ask, but they get at something that we ask too, which is, do you think women have to be more qualified than men to be considered for the same job? And you have two-thirds of young people agree. I mean, they're barely in the workforce, and they agree that women have to be more qualified than men to be considered for the same job. So this is how we're, folks who are more established in the workforce are being reflected or depicted for younger people. So going back to, next slide please, our own work here, and we asked a series of obstacles, and you can see here we have a pretty sizable list. And we say, these are some obstacles people have faced in their own lives. How much has this been an obstacle in your own life? This is just how much of an obstacle for you personally, not, for the country, not how much you're worried about it generally, but for you personally. And so the intensity there is with the darker green bar. The lighter green bar shows the overall amount, in both intense and less intense, in feeling that it's been an obstacle. And this list doesn't have every obstacle that one can face personally, right? I mean, people have parents who are not nurturing or health challenges. There's the list of personal obstacles can be infinite, right? So this is, you know, has some limit to it, but it's still, I think, a pretty sizable list. And know what's at the top. There are a lot of things here that are workforce related and workplace related. Being paid less than men for doing the same job. Finding quality childcare that's also affordable. A lack of flexible work schedule. The need to work twice as hard, kind of like that last question, as other coworkers to get ahead. Having the ability to take time off work to care for your children. The demands of caregiving more broadly. There's, you know, a huge amount of other kinds of care that women face. Not being treated equally or fairly in the workplace. We asked it a couple different ways. Difficulty of finding a partner who does their share. Difficulty of balancing your work commitments and parenthood. Having the ability to take time out of the workforce to raise your children. That's a little bit different than taking time off of work. Lack of respect for women like you in the workplace. And then toward the bottom of this list is sexual harassment in the workplace. I just want to pause on that to just note the earlier key finding. That while this is lower in obstacles women say that they have faced, you'll see that that doesn't mean that women don't feel that there should be some remedy for it. But in terms of what the top tier obstacle across the board, being paid less than men for doing the same job, sort of the basics of kind of workplace respect and treatment, flexibility, pressures of caregiving and how that magnifies all those challenges. Those are the challenges that women say they face pretty, that is considerable for them. Now, the next slide, please. We'll focus on communities of color. So looking at African-American women and among Latinas, I think it's important to note here that these concerns are, these obstacles are even more predominant with communities of color. So the column on the right-hand side where it says overall 43, 48, that's what the total was overall with women overall. But you can see with communities of color that these concerns are higher. We had to change the scale here to make room for these longer bars with communities of color. African-American women saying lack of respect for minorities is an obstacle that they face personally, not being treated fairly, being paid less than men, among Latinas, a flexible work schedule, finding quality childcare, and the demands of caregiving more broadly. Those are the concerns of communities of color. It's important as we have a national conversation about workplace challenges that we integrate the voices of women of color who feel these challenges more acutely. And then a party difference, and Christine and I were talking about this a little bit earlier today, and she may want to chime in, and we're going to talk about party differences later on. But what's interesting here is you see a little bit more of a party difference here than we may see later when we talk about the policy remedies, and that Democrats say that structural obstacles are more salient to them personally than Republicans are likely to have those challenges. So among Democratic women, being paid less than men for the same work, finding quality child care, demands of caregiving, not being treated fairly or equally. For Republican women, they say that their top obstacles are finding a partner to share, household duties, finding quality child care. That's pretty ubiquitous. And having the ability to take time out of the workforce to raise your children, the need to work twice as hard. It depends on how you want to view this. There are differences in this ranking. The differences are, but there are also similarities. And when you think about, and I think the differences are important to note and consider and reflect on, that the sort of that some of the tone and language that differs from the parties makes sense, and that there's some words here that are cues, party cues that perhaps have women like voters overall kind of move into their, you know, whatever camp, their party camp. But there are still more similarities here than differences, especially when you put it in the context of the overall climate right now, which, as I'm sure folks on this call know, can be toxic, can be so partisan that it almost is too tough to look at overall polling results, that you almost need to look at every poll result through the lens of party because the parties are so different. And when you have that pattern so pervasive, and then you have this pattern here, which while there are party differences, they are not overwhelming, it perhaps is a sign that there are more similarities in women's experiences than differences. And just to pause on sexual harassment, and sexual harassment was not the main thrust of what we were investigating here, but it is obviously, while we were in the field and at the time we were in the field, obviously still true now, it is such a part of the conversation that we wanted to explore too, and obviously it's something that people want to talk about. So we built it out a little bit here. We asked about the obstacle piece. It's just the obstacle piece that we discussed earlier, broken out by a variety of different audiences, so we can see what the trends are here. And remember, overall, about 33% said sexual harassment in the workplace is an obstacle they face personally. Massive, massive difference by age, just massive. And I think that's to be expected, but it's really worth noting. And that's related to the party and racial and ethnic differences too. Those are all variables that co-vary together. But the age piece there is quite dominant. Now, again, just because, next slide, please. So I'm on page 10, says figure 9, sorry. Just because harassment isn't the top tier obstacle for people, it doesn't mean that women think that it's a rare phenomenon. We ask this either or question, which comes closest to your own view? Sexual harassment is something that happens mostly with men in powerful positions like politics, media, or big business, or it's something that happens in most workplaces. We're just more likely to hear about the high profile incidents. And I'm not surprised by these results, but I think they're important results given the conversation. Overwhelmingly, people, and there are no differences here. I mean, these differences are based by across different audiences are negligible. Everyone feels that this is something that happens everywhere. So it's an important reminder of how important it is when we have these conversations that they are inclusive and of the breadth of women's workplace experiences. And on the next slide, where it says figure 10, this is a poll from Quinnipiac that shows that most women have experienced sexual harassment in some way. 60% say they've experienced it in some way, and of those who say they've experienced it, 2/3 say they've experienced it at work as opposed to other kinds of settings. So moving on to a variety of proposals, this is the next slide where it says figure 11 at the top. We asked about a series of proposals. How important are these these proposals? How do you favor or support them? And the top one is require men and women to be paid the same wage or salary for the same job. Now, this is, you know, consistent with the obstacles that we saw, it very much reflects what women said was one of their top tier obstacles, that they weren't getting paid as much as men for doing the same job. It makes a lot of sense. It's something that I've seen in polling now for years. Before we were having a conversation about it over the last year or two, or three, it's something that popped in surveys even when it was not part of the national conversation. In fact, it's something that men also support because it means that their families will earn more if women in their family are making the same as men. So it's something that is really popular across the board. It has obviously very widespread support here. Also, note number 2, make it easier for women to safely report sexual harassment in the workplace. Remember, it wasn't the top obstacle, it's still the top proposal, it's one that is hard for people to say, for women to say, you know, no, we shouldn't do that. But note some of the other things too. So we're going to talk a little bit more about some of these other other obstacles and challenges and proposals. Maintaining affordable health care coverage options for people who need it, regardless of pre-existing conditions. Make sure women have all the coverage they need, like well woman checkups, mammograms, and so on, even if they don't have health insurance. Make college more affordable. Require paid family medical leave so women can take care of a newborn, create a national child care policy. All of these have majority support, very clear majority support with women. Majority strongly support. The gray bar shows the total overall support. The darker bar shows strong support. So there's real intensity in a variety of these proposals, which we should note are not, you know, they're not described with some sort of partisan anchor. It doesn't say who supports them or who doesn't. It just simply says, do you support these? And if you go on to the next slide, which is, says figure 12 at the top, we break these out by party. And this would probably be a good moment for Christine to talk, but I think what this clearly shows is, more agreement than disagreement. You have majorities of Republican women support these proposals, as you have majorities of Democratic women. Is there a difference in intensity? Sure. But overall, there's more agreement here than disagreement. And what's your take on this, Christine?
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Margie, and hello. We were really struck by the just across-the-board support. Now, you remember that Margie pointed out that for Democratic women, they personally saw being paid less than men as a personal obstacle. Republican women didn't name that as their own personal obstacle, but it's very, very clear that by supporting this policy, they're on the same page about, you know, the fact that men and women should be paid the same wage. So in terms of a policy outcome, Republican, Democratic, and independent women all line up, even if it's not a challenge that, for example, the Republican women say they have faced personally. And as Margie has very clearly mentioned, I mean, sexual harassment may not be a leading issue. It may not be a top concern, except you saw, you know, the numbers by age, so that it was a very significant issue to women under the age of 30, because as we know, sexual harassment is about power. The younger you are, the less seniority you have in your job, you know, the less power you tend to have, the less, and so it only makes sense that you're, you know, much more likely to be a victim of sexual harassment because it's about power. But the fact is, all women support, you know, cracking down on sexual harassment, making it easier for women to report. So there's a global understanding that this is a concern, even though it may not be impacting me personally. And then also just widespread agreement about maintaining affordable health care coverage options, and this includes pre-existing conditions. What isn't on here that both majorities of Democratic and Republican women support is also making sure women have coverage for routine medical care, well women checkups, mammograms, pap smears, and birth control, even if they don't have health insurance. So Republican women, again, are in agreement with Democratic women on many, if not most, of these policies because of these shared, you know, values and experiences. And then
yep.
Next slide, please. Oh, really quickly, neither Democratic nor Republican women liked proposals that would allow any company or employer to deny employees insurance coverage for birth control. Again, we saw a majority support keeping birth control coverage for all women, even if they don't have health insurance. So they don't like this, neither Democratic nor Republican women. And they don't like no longer requiring insurance plans to cover maternity care. So both camps are in agreement on those things, too. They don't want to see those things happen. Margie?
Yes. So great. So next slide, which now says figure 13. And we drilled down a little bit on the role of birth control and family planning. And you can see some differences here by among communities of color and with our executive population, who I should just add, I don't think I mentioned it at the top, are about 13% of women overall say that they have some sort of executive or leadership role in their organization. So we asked a couple questions. How important has access to birth control been in your ability to plan the size of your family? And then a separate question, how important has the ability to plan if and when to have children been for your ability to pursue your personal, professional, or career goals? And you can see here very clear, consistent results that the role of birth control and family planning has been incredibly important, whether it's to plan the size of the family, which is, you know, obviously part of the definition of family planning, but also in the ability to pursue professional and career goals as well. And there are differences here in that executive women are even more likely to say that this is important than some of the other, than women overall or some communities of color. But still, again, I think a theme here is that there are more consistencies than not across different groups of women. And just to wrap up, and then we can take questions, the challenges women face are nuanced and varied. Sexual harassment is not a standalone proxy for women's issues. And devoid of a partisan anchor, women agree more than they disagree on top policy priorities, particularly when it comes to things like whether it's not just sexual harassment, but also in terms of healthcare and access to healthcare. So thanks again for this, and I know there are lots of folks on the line, and I'm sure there are some questions. Happy to continue to talk more.
Great. Well, thank you. That was a really comprehensive overview and valuable. I want to remind everybody on the phone, if you'd like to ask a question or talk to us about your own experience or provide any policy recommendations, press 1 on your telephone keypad, or you can email that question to us at info@businessfwd.org. As folks are getting ready and coming through the system, I'm going to just start with a couple emailed questions that we had and a couple questions here at Business Forward. You, Margie and Christine, for those of you on the phone who aren't aware, they published an op-ed about the sexual harassment piece of this and what we learned from it. And I know we covered a good amount of it on the during the presentation, but as you pointed out, it's lower than some of the issues that we tested in terms of an obstacle, but still very serious. And so could you just elaborate a little bit more on what you found and maybe highlight again some of the policy prescriptions that women really supported to address this issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear from the results that the challenge when we're having this conversation now about women's issues is that things can be kind of, because of just the nature of how the media talks about issues generally, not just women's issues, like everything is being like boiled down to a concentrate or reduced to kind of something. It's very much an oversimplification. And to look at women's issues through the lens of sexual harassment and say that that's sort of the beginning and the end of the conversation for women about and is the only standard through which women are going to be evaluating employers, leaders, et cetera, policies is to mistake what the challenges that women face overall, and that's I think the why it's important to capture, as we did in the survey, a variety of different we call them dependent variables or scales or questions. What are the different measures we're looking at? Not simply is sexual harassment a problem broadly, or should we have a policy to help to make it safer for women to come forward, which is obviously widely popular. Not just even whether or not you've experienced it, but also how does it stack up relative to other things that women face? And by if we devote too much time to the issue of sexual harassment, are we doing that at the expense of other issues that are important to women, or is that a door that is opening up to a larger conversation about women's issues more broadly? So that I think is a key takeaway from these data and also just my observation from the sort of broader conversation that we're having about the issue.
Thanks. The poll also included an oversampling of women executives. Can you explain to the participants on the phone what that means and highlight some of the differences between the executives and the non-management workers, or maybe more importantly, talk about the factors that women in leadership positions have really found to either be problematic or, frankly, experienced less?
Yeah, so I would say, there you know, overall the trend would be there are more similarities between executives and sort of and other women in our audience than differences in terms of the goals and challenges that women face. There are a lot of similarities, but I would say there are two or three key differences. One key difference is obviously, but it's probably not a surprise that women who say that they are executives in their organization are going to be more optimistic and positive about their own economic situation, about how challenging it's been for them to, one, are they getting ahead or are they falling behind economically? Do they think the country is moving in the right direction? Do they feel that that's been challenging for them to pursue the kinds of professional goals that they wanted? By all of those different metrics, executives are quite a bit more likely to say that they feel positive. They're more positive about the economic direction. They're more positive about their own financial situation. They're just going to be a little bit more positive. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are more positive overall about women's issues or that they don't feel that these challenges have faced them. They generally feel just exactly the same as women overall about how hard or easy it is for women to achieve professional goals relative to men. Majority say it's harder, whether you're executive or not. Having a job that you enjoy is a little bit more important as a priority or a career that you enjoy among executives than for women overall. But you have majorities of women across the board say that achieving a level of advancement and having, achieving a level of advancement that they feel that they deserve in their job or achieving the level of education that women want, that they have set for themselves, those goals and priorities are similar for executive women as for women overall. The place where there is another part of divergence is on the impact of parenthood and the role of planning one's family and how much of and how deliberate and impactful that's been on women's own personal decisions. So there you see quite a bit of a difference. So among executives, just to give a couple examples, we asked this question, how deliberate have you been in planning whether and when to have children? A majority of women overall say they've been deliberate, 62%. Among executives, it's 73%. So that's a pretty sizable difference. Women across the board, and the importance of access to birth control, we talked about that in planning the size of one's family. It's 72% with women overall, 90% among executive women. So some differences there and how important that's been for their own ability to pursue professional goals, 75% with women overall, 86% with executives. I don't want to overstate these differences here. They're sizable. They are not, again, not overwhelming, but they are sizable and to the extent that it's worth noting those differences. So those I would say would be the major contrast points and also similarities between executive women and others.
Thanks. We had a question, and this may have been at the earlier part of the presentation, and some may have missed it. So could you just cover again what the sample size for this poll was and the number of Democrats and Republicans who participated in the survey?
Sure. Yes. So overall, we did a sample size of 1,500. It was an audience that included an oversample of African American women, Latina women, and executive women. So of the 1,500, which we then show 1,000, so we kind of weight down the oversample so it's representative, we had talked to 240 African American women, 248 Latinas, and 370 women executives. So that's the overall. And let me go down to get to the party breakout, which is down here toward the bottom. And it's very much reflective of sort of how of the women's electorate. We talked to adults. We didn't talk to voters, which is worth noting here. So among Democrats, we have Apologies. We have 45% among Democrats, and we have 30% are Republicans. So you have a Democratic advantage, which is reflective of where the party, you know, the gender gap in party identification that's been happening for a long time, as well as a current advantage that Democrats have in party identification nationally.
Great, thank you. So we had one woman ask, and I know recognize this is kind of out of the realm of the survey itself, but it's a good lead-in into our last question here, which is, most venture capital firms are run by men. How can women raise capital how can women have a better advantage at raising capital for their company? Obviously, that's not part of the survey that we had here, but we saw earlier in this presentation that there is support on both sides of the aisle for policies that will improve the workplace for women. Strong support. What do we think is getting in the way, and what can the women or the men on this call do to help fix the problem?
So I would say, you know, I would say a few things. I mean, I would say, you know, one, there's this, you know, a couple things. One, there's a perception that this is sort of a partisan issue that is, you know, one that only kind of elite liberal Democratic women care about. And if you're not in that group, then it's just not a thing that you're concerned about. I think that's, you know, one myth that these results, in addition to lots of other public polling, can debunk pretty convincingly. So there's that. I think, you know, the other thing would be that this is something that, you know, that men don't even, you know, care about. That it's important, but maybe not a voting issue. But I think if it's something that is explained in a way that is not partisan, since it's not partisan where voters are, it's something that can be described in a without the kind of partisan shorthand where you're talking about discrimination or sexism or feminism even. And it's not that those words don't have bipartisan appeal, but they are shorthands that are cues for party camps, you know, which jersey you wear, the blue jersey or the red jersey. But if we're just talking about equal opportunity and making it easier for women who have a lot of caregiving responsibilities be able to, you know, support their families, but also, you know, find the quality care they need for their parents or their friends or their, you know, loved ones or their children, then those are things that, those are, you know, day-to-day struggles that a lot of people can understand and relate to that don't have to be part of the sort of Washington political partisan back and forth. I mean, I'd be curious as to Christine's perspective. I don't think that, you know, I think that folks who are progressives in this movement can have a wider focus of these issues to reach across the aisle for, you know, where there is a lot of common ground, just like without sort of shedding Democratic or progressive values. And just like I think there are ways for Republicans to talk about the business case and the productivity case and the, you know, the family case for a lot of these proposals as well.
Great, thanks. I think that's a good place to end. To everybody on the call, please check your email for a quick survey about today's call, and we'll also send you a recording. This is a good lead-in to some information about future programming. We plan to do a conference call in February with S&P and some lead researchers there who did a study on how making it easier for women to stay in the workforce would boost the country's GDP. So please watch for an invitation to that. So thank you to Christine and Margie for your presentation and your advice here today. And thanks to all of you for taking time out of your busy schedule to listen to this call and to participate. We look forward to working with you all again soon. Have a good afternoon.